It's Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, filling in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, our guest tells us about an effort to reintroduce the lake sturgeon to the Milwaukee area.
But first, the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development just released new Wisconsin job numbers. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics report revised the July figures and included preliminary August data.
While employment figures can sometimes be difficult to sort out, these in many ways seem pretty straightforward and generally positive.
Joining us to analyze the data is Abdur Chowdhury. He's a professor of economics at Marquette University. Professor Chowdhury, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on your program.
So what have the recent trends been in the jobs report before we got these numbers today?
Actually, job growth-wise, Wisconsin has not done very well. Nationally, we are in the lower 25% of the states in terms of job creation. Now, if you look at the statistics that was released today, in fact, if you closely look at the numbers, it doesn't give you a very positive picture of job creation.
But the fact is, it does seem like unemployment rates are going down in the 12 metropolitan areas and in all of the 72 counties. So how do you take those numbers and compare that with overall job growth?
Okay. See, it is happening. The reason unemployment statewide is because people have dropped out from the labor force. Okay. For example, if you look at the actual number in August 2015, compare it with August 2014, you'll see that in terms of employment, the increase, according to this statistics, is zero. Mm. That means total employment has not increased. What has happened is total labor force has declined by 27,800. And so unemployment has dropped by 27,800. And when you do the calculation, you see the unemployment rate dropped from 5.3% last August to 4.5% this August. So if you look at really at the numbers, we don't see much job creation statewide. It's just that people have dropped out from the labor force, lowering the unemployment rate.
So this is interesting because, just to make sure I'm understanding what you're saying, it's not kind of like a teeter-totter where one side goes up and the other side goes down and vice versa. You're saying that there are fewer people unemployed, but that does not translate into more people being employed.
Exactly. Yeah. The reason fewer people are unemployed is because the labor force has declined. Okay. 27,800 has dropped out from the labor force.
And when you say dropped out from the labor force, I'm assuming that some of those are because people retired, but are there other reasons? Who else falls under that category of dropped out of the labor force?
There are many people who may decide to drop out from the labor force. For example, yes, retirement may be one factor. Then we may have people who didn't like the labor market, couldn't find a job, so they decided not to look for a job anymore, dropped out from the labor force. So that happens quite a bit. We have seen both at the state and national level that, you know, if they're not looking positive, people may decide to stop looking around for jobs.
And so it seems like maybe to kind of dig into those numbers and figure out, you know, some are retiring and that at least for them is a positive thing, I would think. Others are, it sounds like, just kind of giving up. So then do we need to look further and look at the numbers of people that are actually taking unemployment benefits or new applications? How do we decide who it is in that number of the 27 plus thousand?
Yes. Although we don't have that statistics that came out today, but basically what we do is we look at people who have applied for unemployment compensation, for example, okay, whether that number has changed or not. Okay. Now, in terms of job creation, now I should also point out one thing, that this is a monthly statistic that comes out. It may vary a lot. For example, when the revisions come out in August, things may change. Okay, the more reliable data to look at is the quarterly data that comes out, which is a little bit more reliable. The problem with the quarterly data is it comes out after about 6 months. Mm. So, you know, you don't see the picture right now. So you have to wait till, I would say, early next year before you see actually what happened in August.
We're talking with Professor Abdur Chaudhry. He's a professor of economics at Marquette University, and we're discussing the newly released jobs numbers for the state of Wisconsin. So we've talked about the fact that lower unemployment rates doesn't necessarily mean that there are more employed people. Is low unemployment always a good thing, or are there negatives to having a lower unemployment rate?
No, obviously, if unemployment rate lowers to the natural rate, the full employment rate, it's a good thing. So currently, if we look at the number, the unemployment rate in the state of Wisconsin is quite low. There's no question about it. It's below the national rate currently, has been below the national rate for some time. So overall, there is not much to complain about the unemployment rate numbers here. But what I'm saying is that things over the last 1 year didn't improve much.
Mm-hmm. And are employment numbers cyclical or seasonal? Are there times of the year where there are different factors that might be coming into play in those numbers?
Yes, that's why there are some seasonal factors. That's why we always try to look at seasonally adjusted number. And the number that I talked about employment not increasing, people dropping out from the labor force, that's seasonally adjusted numbers I'm looking at. But yes, obviously, there are seasonal factors. You know, in summer, you will see unemployment go up because of seasonal reasons. Then, you know, at the end of summer, you know, you'll see some drop in employment. So that do happen. So we tend to look at seasonally adjusted numbers.
So given what we're seeing from July and August and how it fits into this general trend of a lack of job growth in the state, what do you expect for September numbers or when we get those quarterly numbers that you said are actually a lot more indicative of the state of the economy?
Okay. When the quarterly numbers come out or the actual figures come out, basically, we haven't seen much improvement job-wise in the state of Wisconsin. One of the reasons for that is because if you look at the state of Wisconsin, most of the jobs that are usually created are created in Milwaukee and Madison area. Those are the areas where we really create jobs. Now, if you compare Madison and Milwaukee with similar cities across the nation, we haven't grown much. The manufacturing industries, for example, in this area, their employment has not increased much. One of the reasons for that is, if you look at the type of manufacturing that we have in the state, paper production and things like that, demand for those products have not increased nationally. Okay. So that's one of the reasons we don't see much improvement in job creation. Okay. How do we address that problem? One way we can address that problem is through diversification. Okay. If we can diversify the industries in the state, that would help us to create more jobs. An example that I always give is Iowa. If you look at the state of Iowa, what they have done is they have diversified a lot, especially in the IT areas, where there are a lot of opportunities. So they have been able to create a lot of jobs. Now, that's the type of diversification we need in Wisconsin to create more jobs.
Well, Professor Chaudhry, thanks so much for joining us today and lending us your expertise.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Abdur Chaudhry. He's a professor of economics at Marquette University.
Pope Francis addressed Congress today, the first time that a pontiff has spoken to the American legislative branch. That in itself means he made history, but will what he said also leave a lasting impact?
Joining us now to discuss what was said and the response is Eileen Burke Sullivan. She's Associate Professor of Theology at Creighton University. Eileen, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for asking me.
Well, this was not the first time that a pope has visited the United States, but it is the first time that a pope has addressed Congress. Why do you think Francis was given that invitation?
Well, Mr. Boehner has been interested in bringing some world leaders, it seems to me, to Congress, and apparently has that authority to do so. And I think that ultimately don't know, other than the fact that Pope Francis is so enormously popular around the world, it would be a coup in anyone's cap or a feather in anyone's cap or a coup for anyone to bring the Pope to address their group, I think.
Well, it's interesting that you say that he's so popular around the world. The New York Times quoted Mustafa El-Sahami, a native Egyptian married to a Catholic of Mexican descent. They won tickets to see the Pope in Central Park. And he said, "I'm a Muslim, but I believe that maybe God sent this guy to unite everybody together. It might be because of statements like this."
The golden rule also reminds us of our responsibility to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development.
How has Francis earned such a following among non-Catholics?
Well, I think he's authentic. First of all, he really speaks the Christian gospel, and that is understandable and articulate around the world. I think the other piece is that he practices largely what he preaches. He's authentic himself. And that's a kind of irresistible combination for Christians of whatever Christian denomination.
So the Pope, in a very short time, has won the support and affections of many non-Catholics worldwide, Christians and otherwise. But how are his positions and messages playing with the Catholic Church faithful?
Well, you know, I think there are clearly mixed reports, but there's a very significant population around the world of Catholics that are incredibly delighted with him. And, you know, there's always going to be a solid group of Catholics. Whoever is Pope, they're going to be very, very attentive and faithful. It's simply a role in the Church that's central to who we are. And so there's a body of faithful that are going to take him very seriously, however he speaks, whatever age he is or wherever he's from. Then there are always a number of Catholics who, particularly I think in these more modern times, who say, well, you know, he's a human leader. Let's wait and see. Let's see if he can practice what he preaches and so on and so forth. So you're gonna have that mixture. And then Catholics have different across. We're a big enough body worldwide that we have a very wide range of formation in our own faith tradition. And I think the least full formation historically has been in Catholic social teaching. And so that's an area of faith formation that needs a lot more sort of steady education through the generations. And as that occurs, I think people will be more and more alerted to that.
So you said that, you know, there are Catholic faithful who will follow him regardless, others that are taking more of a wait and see. One member of Congress, Representative Paul Gosar of Arizona, decided to skip the Pope's address. He defines himself as a proud Catholic, but he disagrees with the Pope's strong position on climate change. Did other members of Congress choose to boycott as well?
I have not heard that they did. He's actually the only member of Congress that I heard, at least it's publicly announcing, that he or she is not going to be in attendance. And I think it's highly unfortunate that he made that choice, because his own formation should have taught him that he doesn't necessarily have to agree with someone that he doesn't agree with, but he does have to. But if he is really a thoughtful Christian listener, he would at least listen with respect. And here's a man who's making an enormous impact on the world, and as a representative of his own people, and as a man who has some impact on public life in the United States, Representative Gozar should have attended simply to hear what the Holy Father is offering and is suggesting, because he's influencing all the people that Gozar needs to also influence.
We are talking with Eileen Burke Sullivan. She's Associate Professor of Theology at Creighton University. We're talking about the Pope's address to Congress today and what impact that might have. Well, Pope Francis addressed a Congress and a country that is politically polarized right now. He took the opportunity to say directly to Congress and people around the world, especially in leadership positions, that they are called not to resort to simplistic ideas of good and evil. Do you think his message might have any kind of lasting impact?
I could only hope. I believe that what Pope Francis was saying about the radical need to dialogue, to engage with people we don't agree with so that we really understand more deeply a fuller sense of message, is something that every human being could hear, but certainly people who are in political authority to make laws ought to be able to listen to. And so will it make a difference? I hope. I think there was, from my perspective, this was a moment of grace, a great moment of grace, where in some very deep way, I would say God was speaking to us, to the United States, about our future, about our present and our future, about our hopes and dreams, and about our possibilities. And it might be that this is an opportunity that if we let pass, we will not succeed very well.
So I want to go back, Eileen, because you obviously listened to the Pope's address, but you had a different audience that you were part of than most of us would have. Who were you listening to the Pope's address with?
Well, I was with a group of 500 high school seniors. We at Creighton decided to invite the seniors of the Catholic high schools in our city and area to come together to Creighton to a watch gathering, and then an opportunity to really engage in some what we call Ignatian reflection. We're a Jesuit university, and he's a Jesuit pope, so we wanted to say, here's a way that our tradition and our within the Catholic tradition teaches us to sit back and really think about and reflect on what we've heard and what it means to us. And we wanted to teach this to our own young adults at the university, and we just felt like here's an opportunity to go beyond our borders to our neighboring schools, if you will, and to just invite them to join us and to reflect with us in the way college kids would. So it was a very exciting morning. They were just charming. They were incredibly alive and vivacious, but they listened with rapt attention. And I thought we used technology, the media, to let them respond through tweets and so forth. And it was just inspiring from start to finish.
We're talking with theology professor Eileen Burke Sullivan about the Pope's address to Congress earlier today.
And we'd like to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Have you been following Pope Francis and what he's been saying here in the U.S. Leading up to this as well? What messages of his resonate with you, or do you disagree with his positions on some or all issues? If you're Catholic, what does having him here in the U.S. mean to you? If you're not, have you been interested in what he's had to say?
We hope you'll join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Pope Francis addressed Congress today, the first time that a pontiff has spoken to the American legislative branch. That in itself means he made history, but will what he said also leave a lasting impact?
Joining us now to discuss what was said and the response is Eileen Burke Sullivan. She's Associate Professor of Theology at Creighton University. Eileen, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you for asking me.
Well, this was not the first time that a pope has visited the United States, but it is the first time that a pope has addressed Congress. Why do you think Francis was given that invitation?
Well, Mr. Boehner has been interested in bringing some world leaders, it seems to me, to Congress, and apparently has that authority to do so. And I think that ultimately don't know, other than the fact that Pope Francis is so enormously popular around the world, it would be a coup in anyone's cap or a feather in anyone's cap, or a coup for anyone to bring the Pope to address their group, I think.
Well, it's interesting that you say that he's so popular around the world. The New York Times quoted Mustafa El-Sahami, a native Egyptian married to a Catholic of Mexican descent. They won tickets to see the Pope in Central Park. And he said, "I'm a Muslim, but I believe that maybe God sent this guy to unite everybody together. It might be because of statements like this."
The golden rule also reminds us of our responsibility to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development.
How has Francis earned such a following among non-Catholics?
Well, I think he's authentic. First of all, he really speaks the Christian gospel, and that is understandable and articulate around the world. I think the other piece is that he practices largely what he preaches. He's authentic himself. And that's a kind of irresistible combination for Christians of whatever Christian denomination.
So the Pope, in a very short time, has won the support and affections of many non-Catholics worldwide, Christians and otherwise. But how are his positions and messages playing with the Catholic Church faithful?
Well, you know, I think there are clearly mixed reports, but there's a very significant population around the world of Catholics that are incredibly delighted with him. And, you know, there's always going to be a solid group of Catholics. Whoever is Pope, they're going to be very, very attentive and faithful. It's simply a role in the Church that's central to who we are. And so there's a body of faithful that are going to take him very seriously, however he speaks, whatever age he is or wherever he's from. Then there are always a number of Catholics who, particularly I think in these more modern times, who say, well, you know, he's a human leader. Let's wait and see. Let's see if he can practice what he preaches and so on and so forth. So you're gonna have that mixture. And then Catholics have different across. We're a big enough body worldwide that we have a very wide range of formation in our own faith tradition. And I think the least full formation historically has been in Catholic social teaching. And so that's an area of faith formation that needs a lot more sort of steady education through the generations. And as that occurs, I think people will be more and more alerted to that.
So you said that, you know, there are Catholic faithful who will follow him regardless, others that are taking more of a wait and see. One member of Congress, Representative Paul Gosar of Arizona, decided to skip the Pope's address. He defines himself as a proud Catholic, but he disagrees with the Pope's strong position on climate change. Did other members of Congress choose to boycott as well?
I have not heard that they did. He's actually the only member of Congress that I heard, at least it's publicly announcing, that he or she is not going to be in attendance. And I think it's highly unfortunate that he made that choice, because his own formation should have taught him that he doesn't necessarily have to agree with someone that he doesn't agree with, but he does have to. But if he is really a thoughtful Christian listener, he would at least listen with respect. And here's a man who's making an enormous impact on the world, and as a you know, representative of his own people, and as a man who has some impact on public life in the United States, Representative Gozar should have attended simply to hear what the Holy Father is offering and is suggesting, because he's influencing all the people that Gozar needs to also influence.
We are talking with Eileen Burke Sullivan. She's Associate Professor of Theology at Creighton University. We're talking about the Pope's address to Congress today and what impact that might have. Well, Pope Francis addressed a Congress and a country that is politically polarized right now. He took the opportunity to say directly to Congress and people around the world, especially in leadership positions, that they are called not to resort to simplistic ideas of good and evil. Do you think his message might have any kind of lasting impact?
I could only hope. I believe that what Pope Francis was saying about the radical need to dialogue, to engage with people we don't agree with so that we really understand more deeply a fuller sense of message, is something that every human being could hear, but certainly people who are in political authority to make laws ought to be able to listen to. And so will it make a difference? I hope. I think there was, from my perspective, this was a moment of grace, a great moment of grace, where in some very deep way, I would say God was speaking to us, to the United States, about our future, about our present and our future, about our hopes and dreams, and about our possibilities. And it might be that this is an opportunity that if we let pass, we will not succeed very well.
So I want to go back, Eileen, because you obviously listened to the Pope's address, but you had a different audience that you were part of than most of us would have. Who were you listening to the Pope's address with?
Well, I was with a group of 500 high school seniors. We at Creighton decided to invite the seniors of the Catholic high schools in our city and area to come together to Creighton to a watch gathering, and then an opportunity to really engage in some what we call Ignatian reflection. We're a Jesuit university, and he's a Jesuit pope, so we wanted to say, here's a way that our tradition and our within the Catholic tradition teaches us to sit back and really think about and reflect on what we've heard and what it means to us. And we wanted to teach this to our own young adults at the university, and we just felt like here's an opportunity to go beyond our borders to our neighboring schools, if you will, and to just invite them to join us and to reflect with us in the way college kids would. So it was a very exciting morning. They were just charming. They were incredibly alive and vivacious, but they listened with rapt attention. And I thought we used technology, the media, to let them respond through tweets and so forth. And it was just inspiring from start to finish.
We're talking with theology professor Eileen Burke Sullivan about the Pope's address to Congress earlier today.
And we'd like to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Have you been following Pope Francis and what he's been saying here in the U.S. Leading up to this as well? What messages of his resonate with you, or do you disagree with his positions on some or all issues? If you're Catholic, what does having him here in the U.S. mean to you? If you're not, have you been interested in what he's had to say?
We hope you'll join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We're talking about the Pope's historic address before Congress today with Eileen Burke Sullivan, Associate Professor of Theology at Creighton University.
And we'd like to hear from you. What's your opinion of Pope Francis? Do his thoughts and positions resonate with you, or do you disagree with him on some or all issues? If you're Catholic, what does having him here mean? And if you're not, have you been following his visit anyway?
Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
Well, as expected, Eileen, Pope Francis spoke about the sanctity of all life, which has been a consistent theme of his. But I think what might have surprised many listeners is that instead of talking directly about abortion first, he instead called for a complete end to the death penalty. That has certainly been a big topic here in the United States for many decades. Do you think his address is likely to change any minds here?
Well, again, I would hope so. And I think that by placing that in the context of the profound respect and dignity of human life at every stage, the Pope was highlighting that the teaching that we have consistently taught about abortion, we have also developed into around the death penalty. And I think that Pope Francis's point about we have to give people hope was also even, you know, those who are in our prison systems and so on. I thought that was very admirable that he said it, and I can only hope that people heard it.
Yeah, for listeners who didn't get a chance to hear the address, in addition to calling for the end to the death penalty, he also said that all punishment should always have an element of hope and rehabilitation, which is not always part of a kind of a tough on crime message.
That's correct.
We do have some callers that would like to join in the conversation, so let's go to the phones. And Annie in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, Annie.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. People, I hope, are reading this beautiful encyclical because it is not just pointing out the failures of one person, one country. It is all of us and what our responsibilities are to everybody that has ever been born and who will sometime be born. It's for the future. It's for now, and it's for the future. And it's beautifully written. Anybody who takes umbrage at what he wrote, I'm wondering about, because it's time that somebody says what he said in this encyclopedia, in this encyclical.
And Annie, you're referring to the encyclical that really deals with care of the earth and climate change, especially?
Everything, yeah. Everything. I mean, it's comprehensive, and it's not a finger pointer at, oh, this country is doing this wrong, this country is doing that wrong. That's not the point. The point is we have responsibilities to each other, and we have to do the very best we can to take care of this, what is proving to be a fragile world that we live in. It's responsibility of individuals, it's responsibility of corporations, of all of us, not just a few people.
Annie, thanks so much for that call. And Eileen, I think Annie brings up an interesting point that the Pope really did speak both today in front of Congress and in the encyclical in a very wide way. So today during his address, he talked about the importance of successful business in providing livelihoods for people who are trying to improve their lot in life and that of their children. But he also talked about the importance of basically business ethics and sustainability.
That's right. He said very clearly that it's very important that we provide jobs, but not at the expense of the future of the earth.
Let's go back to the phones, and Suzanne in Waukesha is next. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. I am just thrilled with the Pope's message, and I am thrilled to be Catholic. I think the Pope is representing who we as Catholics are beautifully, and so many of us take one side of Catholicism and emphasize it. But Catholicism means respect for life in every form. And I believe that means we're not for abortion. I believe that means we're not for the death penalty. I think it means we care about the immigrants. We care about the poor. We respect our earth. And that can't be put under any one party.
Thank you for that call, Suzanne. I'm guessing that means, Suzanne, that you have sometimes a hard time finding a political candidate that you really agree with on all of those points.
It used to be true, but I believe that one party has been so one issue that and does not respect life in all its forms that I have had to choose a party, though I do not always agree with the party.
Hmm. Thank you so much for that call. And Suzanne brought up the issue of immigrants and the poor, Eileen, and certainly, you know, the immigration is a huge issue in the United States and other countries. And you know, the really horrible situation that Syrian refugees are in as they flee the Syrian civil war and are flooding into Europe and Turkey and other places, it certainly is on the Pope's mind. And I thought that one of the most powerful things that he said today was that despite the large numbers and how intimidating and overwhelming the number of refugees might be, that we need to look into their faces and listen to their stories.
Yes. That's very much continuous with his themes of the profound respect for every human being as an individual human being.
And in addition, he prefaced that by saying he himself is a child of immigrants, that everyone in that chamber that he was speaking to was likely the descendant of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And so really bringing this large human tragedy that we are all seeing unfold right now really down to the personal individual level.
Exactly. And, you know, I think it's in the U.S. especially, we can tend to forget that we have our lives here because at some time in our, you know, in our family's history, people came, and not surprisingly, many of them came under the aegis of crisis, either economic crisis or wartime crisis or, you know, political persecution. I mean, even the founding parents of this country were, in some senses, fleeing, in several parts of the country, were fleeing persecution, religious persecution, but not always religious, some other persecution. And their early decisions were to really make this a home for those who are truly wanting a life of dignity and confidence and are willing to build the common good. And I just think that that's something we who are already here have to really ponder and think about, how much we owe to a system that allowed us in.
So not all responses to Pope Francis have been positive during this trip. His canonization of 18th century Spanish missionary Junipero Serra has been criticized by some indigenous people who say that he enslaved and murdered thousands of Native Americans when he converted them to Catholicism in California. Does Francis have work to do on relations with indigenous communities, especially as a pope who is of Spanish descent from Latin America?
Well, he may. I mean, of course, his own family came late, you know, from Italy. And so in that sense, his own immigrant roots are European, landing in Latin America well after whatever would have been the conversion stage of the 16th century. His family came, I think, in the early 20th century. So he's really early 19th. But he's really, yes, he's part of a culture that is on both northern and southern hemispheres, the populations are primarily European and to some extent Asian, who've come in from other parts of the world on Native peoples that were here, small populations of Native peoples that were here, and then either mixed with them or destroyed them.
Pope Francis.
Or didn't mix with them. I mean, have, you know, cast them onto reservations and one thing or another. In terms of Junipero Serra and others, I mean, I think one thing Pope did say today that kind of applies to this is that we have to be careful about judging past actions with present day moral judgments, because people thought differently and functioned differently in a different culture, particularly pre-Enlightenment culture. So the 16th century behaviors, 17th century behaviors are very hard to judge because they may not have had the kind of awareness that we have. I think that there are mixed descriptions of history, and certainly the indigenous people are trying to retrieve and claim their own history and their own voice and ought to. And I appreciate the fact that Pope Francis said, okay, if there are some mistakes that we've made, then part of why we need to do this is to name that we need to own up to our sins.
Eileen, thanks so much for spending the time with us today.
Well, thank you for having me in. I really appreciate it.
That was Eileen Burke Sullivan, Associate Professor of Theology at Creighton University.